All right, are we ready? Round two for Monday, September 19th. The story continues. It's better than watching TV. All right. Before we continue, I'd like to introduce Mr. Torek Taylor. He's the administrative assistant, and we live in the same area, office area, on the fifth floor, just two flights above, in S564 and 654D. So if you have any questions, you'd be the first to get a hold. If you have any questions, get a hold of me. I usually answer my emails within 12 to 24 hours, but barring how many other emails from other people, but I'll get to you. Don't worry. You're not forgotten. All right? If you have any questions or after class. The other thing is I record all the lectures. You're wondering what this thing is attached to me is the umbilical cord is a audio recorder. I will put the on CLE, the podcast for each of these, the audio. So you can take me as an MP3 file wherever you like to take me. The gym, put you to sleep at night, whatever you like. I'd probably be a great sedative. As you fade into the dreams of apoptosis. Okay? It doesn't matter. So I make it an MP3 file. It's about 6 or 8 megabytes. Or something like that. Okay? Actually, no. About 20. It's an hour. But it'll be labeled, and you can download it directly from CLE. And then apply it. Okay? Any questions? All right, continue on. This is a foot. Which foot is it, left or right? Well, you got the obvious. Just looking at it, you're experts at your own feet. And what is the abnormality here? We see what toes are fused? 2 and 3. This is syndactyly, this is a failure of? Apoptosis. So you see how apoptosis becomes a critical part of human development. Just we're using digits. It can affect other organs internally as well. So when we look at apoptosis pathologically, one of the truest parasite that the eukaryotic cell has to deal with are viruses. They cannot live or propagate without the host. They're the ultimate parasite is a virus. So you can imagine that the virus is now using the host cell. And so the virus will have antigens or molecules unique to it that will bind to molecules on the surface of that infected cell. And now your immunologic cells will recognize it. And what will it do to the infected viral cell? Induce apoptosis. That's how it kills it. That's how viruses are destroyed in cells, like chickenpox likes your squamous cells and neurons. So it can cause those. Or hepatitis A through E. You're going to cause cytotoxic T8 cells, cause molecules to initiate apoptosis, and then they die. And we call them counselman bodies or dead hepatocytes. If you, hormones, as you go through endocrine physiology, remember that all hormones are mitogenic. They can cause their target cells not only to change their physiologic and biochemical properties, but they also stimulate them to proliferate. And what's a classic one is estrogen or in testosterone. So if a woman can't make estrogen, that's why her breasts become smaller when she becomes postmenopausal, because estrogen affects not only the breasts as well as the endometrium. So hormones are mitogenic. And so when you castrate a male, what's an organ that's dependent upon testosterone is the prostate. And the prostate shrinks, and we call that atrophy. And because there's less cells, because there's less testosterone. So always remember that hormones are mitogenic. Their target cells cause the physical biochemical, but they also cause cells to divide. Estrogen, testosterone are examples of this. If you obstruct a duct with a stone, like a kidney stone, or a duct in the pancreas, or you have a duct in the parotid gland, the largest salivary gland right here, where the seventh cranial nerve, your facial nerve, comes out here, right in front of your ear on each side. Has a duct that goes to the second upper molar. You can actually see the little duct coming into your mouth. If you pull your cheek open and look on the cheek side on your second back molar, you'll see a little dimple sticking out. And that's your parotid duct coming in. If there's a stone, it obstructs the secretions, they back up. And then the kidney, for example, if you have a stone, it will become a sac because of chronic, we call that hydronephrosis. We'll talk about when we get to the kidney. So chronic obstruction can cause the back up and then lead to apoptosis. And will the patient feel this? Remember, when you have an inflammatory process, you're releasing chemical mediators that you'd feel things. But near, cells are dying at the cellular level, and you won't feel a thing. Does a woman complain about when her, or does she feel pain when her, she stops lactating because she stopped breastfeeding? No, no. You don't have no experience. But talk to any woman who's had a child and breastfed, and you ask them, was it painful when their breasts got smaller and smaller? And they'll say, no. Because there's no inflammatory response due to the dead cells. So another thing that can occur, it's an example of this, is how do we kill, is graft versus host disease, where you have a bone marrow transplant to a patient who has a leukemia or neoplasia. You give them chemotherapeutic drugs to get rid of radiation to the bone marrow, and then you give them immunologic cells from somebody else, a bone marrow transplant. And if that bone marrow transplant, you can make cells from that bone marrow transplant attack the recipient, and you get graft versus host disease. The graft being the bone marrow, the host being attacked by the immunologic cells from your bone marrow, lymphocytes, and destroying your skin, your liver, and your intestine. When we give chemotherapy to patients, what's one of the things that chemotherapeutic agents do is induce apoptosis. That's why people complain about what? When they get chemotherapy, the hair falls out. Because you're destroying the stem cells of not only the cancer stem cells, but also the stem cells and other organs and tissues. That's why your hair falls out when you're getting chemotherapy, what affects apoptosis, for example. Okay. This is what acute hepatitis looks like. Morphologically, these are hepatocytes. They're swollen because you can't, you see the nucleus here, and you see the cell swelling. Then if you look carefully, the arrows are showing you, if I got it on this, if it's coming up, let's see here, there are the arrows. They're showing you, whoop, it went too fast, is the delay. What do you notice about the size of these cells compared to these cells here? Smaller. So apoptosis, it gets smaller because they're breaking apart. Do you see an inflammatory response? You see no inflammatory response to those cells, so the patient's not feeling anything except for the swelling that's still reversible. Because you're, what electrolyte is coming into the cell? Sodium. What follows sodium everywhere? So you just have to dream about that tonight as you go to sleep. It's real simple. This is what apoptosis looks like in a diagram. It's taken from your textbook. You don't have to memorize this. I'm not going to ask you A, B, C, D, or E on this thing when you get a memorize. So once you get the idea, that there are two ways of affecting, inducing apoptosis. You can use the mitochondrial pathway, intrinsic, and then extrinsic by receptors on the cell. So let's start here. Why do we want apoptosis in cells that are dividing? Because radiation, toxins, free radicals. Everybody's worried about free radicals. They want to live longer, right? So one of the things is, these do what to DNA? Mutations. What is the most common human cancer on this planet? Is skin cancer, because every time you walk out in the sun, you're exposed to what? UV radiation. Every time you go out there, doesn't matter. So what does the cell protect itself so you don't get skin cancer? Is that once you induce that DNA damage, you have a tumor suppressor gene called P53, that will tell the mitochondria to release cytochrome C oxidase, part of the oxidative phosphorylation, then initiates what are called death pathway, which is capsaicin. These are enzymes that cause your cell to digest itself, break down the cytoskeleton proteins like tubulin, and induce endonucleases that chop up the nucleus into pieces. And then what happens to it? It fragments. And what eats it? Macrophages living in your tissue. But there's no inflammatory response to this process because it's being taken care of by the macrophage. And besides, what do you notice? The plasma membrane is pinching off. So what, it's not releasing molecules like that cell that was swells and it bursts and releases Well, you get an inflammatory response because now you create a chemical gradient. So this is packaged by the plasma membrane and eaten by macrophages. And I'll show you a movie of what this looks like, because this looks very boring and static. But when you see it in a movie, it's pretty sexy when you see it. Okay? So what's another way of inducing it? Is if you withhold a hormone, what happens to the cells? It goes through the process of, like, woman stops breastfeeding, what happens to the size of her breast? Shrinks because she's not making prolactin, and it's now going to induce apoptosis, and therefore it gets smaller without an inflammatory response. If you have virally infected cells, you have cytotoxic T cells, I'll show you the acute viral hepatitis, that will initiate through a process apoptosis. Or you have cytokines. These are molecules that are used to interact with immunologic cells as well as other non-immunologic cells. And tumor necrosis factor, we'll talk about at great length over and over again through this course, made primarily by macrophages, then from T cells are called FAS. And that will induce apoptosis as well. So for example, when you have AIDS, for example, the AIDS virus can induce it by inducing the TNF, as well as being a virus, will induce cytotoxic T cells to kill off those infected cells like T4 cells or T4 positive cells. Okay? So what does it look like in a movie? We have two cells. Here's the nucleus here. Here's the cytoplasm, nucleus. This is what apoptosis looks like when it's actually going on. Looks pretty normal. Biochemical changes are taking place. And what happens to the cell as you destroy the cytoskeletal proteins? They do this. And what do you notice that's coming off its surface? Those cytoplasm blebs. And that's apoptosis. Where can you see this at any time you'd like? YouTube. Just put in apoptosis. And you can watch apoptosis to your delight.
Are there macrophages?
No, this is in tissue culture. That's why you don't see macrophages coming in, but they would be there having a feast. So you think you had a hard day studying for an exam? Try to be a cell going through apoptosis. It's irreversible, yes. Well, the apoptotic cells will be digested and recycled. No, I will get to that when we get to acute inflammation. That's a great question. Okay? Isn't that a great movie? Yeah, just on YouTube. Just put in apoptosis. I got a couple more movies for you. There's interesting movies in pathology. So here's a normal cell with a nucleus. Here we see the organelles. Whoops. Oh, this is Kasi. Sorry about that. Yeah. There we go. Now, you notice that a normal cell has shape. It has little filopodia on the surface, those little spikes. Now, what do you notice about what's happened to the cells become two-dimensional structure does it look like? Circle. Because what's the surface-to-volume ratio when cells lose their cytoskeletal proteins? They become a sphere in a three-dimensional world, but it looks to you in a two-dimensional world, circle. And what do you notice about the nucleus? Is the heterochromatin is becoming condensed and it's going to fragment and become apoptotic. Versus when you have a cell that's going through necrosis, what do you notice about the size of this cell and the organelles compared to the normal cell? What do you notice about its size?
Bigger.
Because what electrolyte has come into the cell?
Sodium.
What follows sodium everywhere?
Water.
And that's why you can feel this process of swelling. And you'll get swelling before you get to apoptosis, but then it goes in that way. But if you get enough cells that die, then you get an inflammatory response in necrosis. Okay? So necrosis, let's go through this. Here's our six flavors of necrosis. We're going to go through each one of them and look at clinical examples. Remember, necrosis defines a condition of dead tissue surrounded by living tissue. The first one is called coagulative necrosis. Coagulative means that the architecture is preserved, but what organelle has been destroyed because of endonucleus is the nucleus. So you have the framework, but the cells are dead. And so when you think of these necrosis, I'm not going to, on an exam, for example, give you a photograph of these different types of necrosis and I expect you to be able to recognize it. I'll describe it to you. The definition will define this. But you should realize when I say coagulant necrosis, what's the mechanism that led to it? That's the critical part that you need, that you're responsible to. So when I say coagulant necrosis, what's the most? It's the most common form of necrosis. What's the most common form of cell injury is hypoxia. So hypoxia is the most common cell injury that any eukaryotic cell has to worry about, is the lack of oxygen. So this is why when I think of a localized area of tissue that dies, that has coagulant necrosis, what do we call this clinically? An infarct. Where you have a heart attack is an MI, is a myocardial infarct, where a part of the heart muscle has died, and it goes through necrosis or coagulant necrosis. So that's how you call it. It's going to be softer than the normal tissue because necrotic tissue is always structurally weaker, always, no matter what the necrosis is, because you've destroyed the structural integrity of that cells within that tissue and its connective tissue compartment. So an infarct is an example. We'll come back and describe infarcts when we get the hemodynamic derangements later on. This is what it looks like. Now, when you look at tissue, you've gone through gross anatomy. What did you notice about the colors of the tissues in gross anatomy? Did all the tissues look the same color? Or did they look vibrant? Red is red, blue is blue, black is black, yellow is yellow. Did they all look vibrant?
They look gray.
Gray, right. So when I show you tissues, I'm going to ask you, is it fixed or fresh? It's like going for stale bread or fresh bread. Despite... Right? That's how you think it. We always think of food. Why? Because food is a metaphor for a lot of things in medicine. Okay? So, the myocardium is red-brown, but here it's fixed. It looks dull-looking. What's the organelle it has a lot of? Is mitochondria. It has iron in it. So when the cell dies, what do you think happens to the mitochondria? It breaks down. So what would happen to its color? Get darker or lighter in color? Lighter. Okay? So what do you notice here? This is what tells me this is a heart attack because I see that it is now pale compared to the surrounding myocardium. It tells me it's dead. So when you, remember, you have these complex molecules in your cells. Once they die, they get enzymatically broken down. So they lose their what? Their color. So that's how we can tell that this is infarcted or dead. This is what a heart attack looks like. And this is the left ventricular wall because it's thicker because it's a higher pressure. We'll get to this. And the chamber of the heart is where you see the blue at the top. And we call this a transmural infarct because it goes through the entire wall thickness. And we'll talk about more about heart attacks when we get to the cardiovascular system in November, or actually late October. Here's the normal myocardium of the heart. It's the only muscle that branches compared to skeletal and smooth muscle cells. The nucleus are located. Here are the intercalated discs. We have gap junctions that allow the transduction of the contraction, depolarization, repolarization. And because it's highly metabolic, because it contains a lot of mitochondria, it has to have a huge capillary. And you can see individual red blood cells delivering the oxygen to the tissue. Because what's the leading cause of death in the United States is ischemic heart disease. Due to coronary artery disease, due to atherosclerotic plaques building up and including blood flow to that myocardium, which now has died. So this is normal. Like on an exam, I'll give you the normal next to it so you don't have to memorize the normal, okay? It'll be given to you, and it'll be in color, by the way. We can afford color now. In my day, it was black and white. Things change, okay? You're lucky. You're in the 21st century, you get color. What tells me this is dead? Because this is the heart. I tell you this is the heart. What organelle is missing? Not the mitochondria. The nucleus. Because you induce endonucleases, we break it down. And so we see the structure of the tissues attacked, but we don't see it's dead. So this is a infarct. Okay? It doesn't matter. It could be the kidney, if you saw the histology. The brain. Doesn't matter what organ. You would see the architecture preserved, but the cells are dead because we don't see the nucleus. Okay, and then we get an acute inflammatory response. Okay, next one. I think of soup when I think of this one. It's liquefactive. Doesn't it sound like soup when you say liquefactive? So I think of pea soup, or any type of soup you like. So what does this tell you about the process? We know we have enzymes in the cells that get activated when it dies. We talked about that. Then we get an inflammatory response. We have cells, the acute inflammatory cells, have enzymes themselves because they were designed to get rid of dead tissue. So if you add all these enzymes to tissue, what's going to happen to the molecules? They get chopped up into smaller and smaller pieces. So it now becomes what physical state? It goes from a solid to a? And we call this what type of necrosis? Liquefactive. And there you go. So when we think of liquefactive, it's both, we call this autolysis, where the cells self-digest when they die, releasing their own acid hydrolase from the lysosomes. And then you have an inflammatory response that's intense that also dumps these lytic enzymes and causes it further to digest. So what's an example of this? Pancreatitis. We know that pancreas contains many enzymes like chymotrypsin, trypsin, lipase, amylase for digestion. But if that pancreas becomes damaged, it releases the enzymes and now digests itself and the tissue because the pancreas is located in the retroperitoneal space, and we call these pseudocysts, liquefied areas of intense enzymatic degradation of the tissue, and we call these liquefactive necrosis. Okay? That's all it refers to. So various tissues have the ability to become liquefied when it dies or injured. Okay? We see both acute and chronic. So here's the normal pancreas. Here are the islets. Let's draw this. Let's bring out, gotta love technology. Here are the islets of Langerhans. And here's the islet here and the islet here. And all around it are the acid units. That's the bulk of your pancreas. 82% of your volume is the exocrine portion that has ducts dumping these enzymes. So let's add a little alcohol or a stone. And then you notice we see this area right here is liquefactive because we can't see the tissue. But if you open it up, you would see liquid pouring out of it, this localized area. Here you see what's left of the inflamed tissue on the left, and it's liquefied. It looks like nothing. Can't even recognize what it used to be, unless somebody tells you it. The next one is, I like this one, is cheese. How many people likes cheese? Good. So this is called caseous necrosis. When I hear this type of inflammation, it's universal. I didn't make these terms up. This is what I get to teach. Okay? So this is a combo. Think of cottage cheese or feta cheese. Kind of liquidy and kind of solid. So this is a combo of liquefactive and coagulative necrosis at the same time. It's a combo. You have to have a sense of humor. If you ever want to study pathology, go to the supermarket the night before, 2 days before, and we can go together and I can show you all the pathology coming off the shelves as we shop to illustrate. Now you eat a guy. I love feta cheese, but on pizza, it doesn't matter. But I'm not thinking about casey necrosis, I'll tell you that much. I'm enjoying the texture and the taste. See, you can laugh. On a Monday, you're doing all right. Okay? You haven't been around pathologists, I could tell. You'll get used to me. Granulomatous inflammation. This is a form of chronic inflammation we'll talk about next week. And a classic example, a granuloma means a localized collection of modified macrophages, or epithelioid cells. The classic infectious disease that leads to this is tuberculosis. That's why everyone has to get a skin test. If your skin test is positive when it's been negative in previous years, what's the first thing to do is give you a chest x-ray to see if you have any type of damage to your lung. And it would be, what would it look like if you could open up and look in your lung? It would be caseous necrosis because of these granulomas that are forming these spheres and they become necrotic in the center. So here's my hands will become many things during this course. Today, this morning, becomes a kidney. Okay? My thumb represents the hilum of the kidney, where the renal artery and vein and the pelvis and the ureter going down your bladder. The superior pole, inferior pole, where your kidneys sit? Right here. So when I'm walking behind somebody, I'm always thinking about how their kidneys are floating in fat in the retroperitoneal space, right here behind the 11th and 12th ribs. Pathologists have a different perspective because we see these. Everyone worries about what you look like on the outside. I'd be more concerned about what you look like on the inside. That's what counts. So this is the kidney. So when we cut the kidney, we cut it, bisect it. So superior pole, inferior pole. So this is how it would be anatomically sitting in the person. Here is the cortex where your glomeruli are. Here's the medulla. And here's the kidney is sitting in a cushion of fat called the retroperitoneal space. So when you're jumping up and down, you can rest assured your kidneys aren't a pillow of fat. And it's not going to tear anything. It's true. You all got fat around. No matter how much weight you lose, you always got fat around your kidneys, no matter how much weight you lose. It's good. Otherwise, it would just be hanging out, going all over the place. Now, if you get tuberculosis coming from the lungs, it gets into your arterial blood supply from the lungs and go to the kidney. This is what cases necrosis looks like in the kidney when you get TB. Doesn't it look like cheese? Queso fresca? Oh, yeah. There's all sorts of kind of yellow. There's all sorts. Doesn't it look like crumbling cheese? So this is why it's called caseous. This is a gross description, not a microscopic. So that kidney is now non-functional. That's the third flavor, yes.
So since that's a combination of the coagulative and the liquefaction, do you still have the loss of the nucleus?
Yes, everything is destroyed.
Now we'll, so is it just kind of like half and half?
Yes. It could be 3/4, 1/4. We got combos, depending on how severe the enzymatic. But it's going to be like cottage cheese, kind of liquidy, like feta cheese. No, they're all destroyed. And I'll show you that when we get to granulomas.
So how is it called coagulative?
Coagulative means the architecture is preserved because we can see the architecture. But here it's a gross term. All the cells you can't recognize is all broken down into pieces. It's destructive. I'll show you that when we get to it. Yes?
Would you be able to tell that the kidney is having this without slicing it in
half? Yes. Do a CT scan or MRI, do a TB skin test, or do a renal biopsy. Those are the things you would be able to see. Next one is what we call fat necrosis. So you have two types of fat. Fat is subcutaneous and visceral fat. Everyone learns about this. Women tend to deposit their fat subcutaneous, while males tend to deposit fat visceral fat. Okay? So fat, when you have an injury to your extremities, you're going to be damaging the fat. This is called the panniculus. Anybody understand why they call it a panniculus or a pannus? What pannus means? Pannus means cloth. We are covered anatomically by a cloth of fat. In your arms, around your muscle compartments, your legs, you have fat around your torso. So we're basically covered with a cloth of fat. That's why when you get a tummy tuck, they call it panectomy. You're removing your cloth in front of your abdomen. That some people have a little bit more cloth than others. So that's why I call it panectomy. So pannus means cloth. You'll hear this term in medicine. What book is required for this course? Medical dictionary. Say, I've already started. Great Scrabble words. Ever play Scrabble? This is how you use these words. They're very important. So when you see fat necrosis, the fat cells become injured. Trauma is a very common cause of fat necrosis. You can think of a bruise. See these injuries, no matter what they are. So even before you damage, if you damage muscle, what's the likelihood of damaging fat? Guaranteed. Because that means it's the force has gone through that subcutaneous fat to get to that muscle or to that bone. So you're causing damage all along those tissues to that point. You get fat necrosis around the pancreas when you have pancreatitis, for example. So here's a normal pancreas. Where does a pancreas sit in the body? When I look at somebody's abdomen or their chest, I'm looking at where their pancreas is. Your head is located right here below your rib cage. Your body and the tail. It goes right across like this, and then the spleen, and it's retroperitoneal, like the kidneys, is surrounded by fat. If you look at your pancreas, this is what normal looks like. You can see here, I'll use my arrow here. Here's the splenic artery. Here's the pancreatic duct, and here we have fat. Now, I'm going to give a patient some alcohol. One of the common causes of acute pancreatitis is to binge drink. So on college campus, you always got to worry about respiratory failure, but you also got to worry about acute pancreatitis because alcohol is toxic to your pancreas. Now we notice this used to be the pancreas, and you can see the yellow fat, fresh or fixed? Fresh. You see red is red, yellow is yellow. And then you might say, what does fat necrosis look like? Well, why is fat yellow? You've gone through gross anatomy. You've dissected through that fat, where there's the extremities. Why is fat yellow? For all this tuition you pay, somebody like me comes along and asks you a very basic question. Because you got to know what normal is, like a good restaurant. When you go to a store and you look at the meat, even if you're a vegetarian, you always you go past there. What's the color of the fat around steak or any type of meat? White. So why is that fat white and our fat as human beings yellow? Curious, isn't it? I always go to the store. There's always pathology questions you can come up with. What's the color of butter? Yellow. What does butter, steak, and the human fat have all in common? When you have a list, you should always ask the question is, what's the common denominator? It's like one-third to plus one-half. And so in medicine, when you get a list, always ask the question, whether it's physiology, biochemistry, or in medicine, always ask what is common. Anybody a strict vegetarian in the audience? All right, be proud. Raise the hand. There you go. We got two strict vegetarians. The rest of you are carnivorous, I can see.
Omnivorous,
all right? Oh, a combo. Balance in life. That's good. Okay? If you were to take a color, if you took these two individuals, you look at peeked inside underneath their skin, they have fluorescent yellow fat. They'd be like that yellow on that panel on the back there. Because what do you notice when the leaves are what? Have green and chlorophyll. When the leaves degenerate, what do the leaves turn into what colors during the fall? Yellow and orange. Those are called xanthophylls. So what does xantho mean? It means yellow. So if you eat a lot of vegetables, you turn nice and bright yellow because it's a lipid-soluble molecules that you have plants that will now go to your fat cells and make them fluorescent yellow. If you ever go see surgery, you can look at what people are eating by the color or the hue of their fat. Because if you eat a lot, if you drink a lot of carrot juice, what color do you turn?
Orange,
that's right. Because it's fat soluble. So anything that colors the change of your fat is fat soluble color molecules like vegetable. And that's why you turn various colors. See, we're more exciting on the inside than the outside. Because we have all these different colors. Some people eat a lot of carrot juice and vegetables and they have a yellow orange color too. It almost looks like sherbet.
Wouldn't you think the meat would be more yellow?
Let's go back to butter and meat. So what are they feeding those cattle that end up becoming your steak? Are grains. They have no color. If they were grazing on grass that was green, it would be yellow, just like your steak. And why is butter yellow? Because it depends upon what time of the year the cattle are making the milk. If it's spring in the summer when they're grazing on those green hills, it's yellow. But in the winter and fall, when they're being fed grains, the butter turns pale white. See, the supermarket has all the issues in terms of explaining this. We're all pretty exciting colors. Does that make sense? See, the supermarket, that's where you study pathology. All those colors. Explaining why we see these things. So where is fat necrosis, you see, is right there. You notice what's its color compared to the normal fat around it? Darker or lighter in color? Lighter, because you've destroyed molecules, and the ability to absorb light is not there, so it becomes pale, just like you destroy the molecules of the mitochondria. Okay? So that's acute hemorrhagic pancreatitis. When you look at it, we see inflammatory cells coming in. It's hard to see because it's washed out. And so this is acute fat necrosis. Liposuction. When you're doing a liposuction, what are you doing? You're causing a lot of massive tissue injury and you get an acute inflammatory response. That's why liposuction is not very popular anymore, because you get all that scarring by sticking in that tube and going. That's why they don't do it anymore, because people complain about all the scarring that takes place. Okay? The next flavor is fibrinoid necrosis. We'll talk about this. This is a oid-like fibrin, which is a protein. Protein turns pink. And this is due to immunologic damage, immunocomplexes, antibodies going to tissue that initiates an inflammatory response where you destroy the connective tissue and it becomes the color pink. So when you look at this, here you see the pink fibrinoid necrosis. Within the glomerulus, we have immunocomplexes, an antibody bound to a soluble antigen. activating your immune response. So you can only see this microscopically, this type of necrosis. Okay? And here we see it. You see the arrows are going to this pinkish material. I'm not going to show you a photograph like this on your exam, but when you hear the word fibrinoid necrosis, you should think of the mechanism that leads to it. Okay? The last is gangrenous necrosis. Will you see this as physical therapists? Yes. So gangrene means that this is a clinical term, and it's a dry gangrene, like diabetics, because they have severe peripheral vascular disease, and it leads to, it's dry. There's not liquefaction. Because dead tissue is the nidus for bacteria and fungi, then you get an inflammatory response, break it down, and it becomes liquefactive. What color is gangrene? What color is it? Black. Another important color in medicine is the color black, like yellow we talked about, xantho. Black is that tells me that there's a biochemical change that's taking place. Remember, if tissues go from aerobic to anaerobic, what acid do you produce a lot of? Lactic acid. So as the tissue produces a lot of lactic acid trying to survive, when it dies, that acid oxidizes all organically bound iron in the cells, like in the mitochondria, as well as hemoglobin. Okay? So when you oxidize iron bound to a protein, it turns the color black. That's why it turns black. So for example, if somebody has esophageal bleeding, where blood is found in your esophagus, let's say for esophageal varices, they'll have black stools coming out. Because what's the acid that's produced in your stomach? Hydrochloric acid. And that's why you get black tarry stools in an upper GI, because the blood has been exposed to an acid environment that oxidizes it to the color black. So it's a strong oxidant that's leading to the color black. Isn't that chemistry? Doesn't that sound like, I mean, see, all that good stuff. You can apply it to medicine, okay? Enough about death. Let's adapt to students as we go through this. There's only four flavors for adaptation we're going to talk about. Why is this important to know as physical therapists, as clinicians, is because these are potentially reversible in various organ systems. So we're going to talk about atrophy, hypertrophy, hyperplasia, and metaplasia. So when we talk about adaptation, whatever the stress or demand on that tissue, if you remove it, it potentially could become, go back to its normal state. And that's a very important clinical principle. And we'll look at various organ systems that this pertains to. A number of these involve the word, the root plasia, growth. And that's a very important term, like neoplasia, metaplasia, hyperplasia, plasia. When you hear that's root, it means growth. Cells are dividing. Okay? So let's take a very important organ system that you work with as physical therapists all the time is muscle. Skeletal muscle. We know that skeletal muscle can't regenerate once it's formed. So it really has only two choices. It either gets bigger in size or it gets smaller in size, essentially, depending on what age you are. So if you don't use muscle, like for example, you put a cast on an extremity for 8 weeks, when you take the cast off, what happens to that extremity in terms of size compared to the uncasted? It's smaller. If you don't use it, you lose it. Because in order to maintain structural muscle integrity, you constantly have to use it to stimulate what? The production of actin and myosin and other contractility proteins to maintain it. But what happens to that person after they get their cast, after they use their arms for a couple of weeks? What happens to that extremity? It goes back because it's what? Reversible. So you just change the molecules, the amount of it that dictates the size. So that's reversible. What's important to muscle is constant what? Innervation. That's a very important thing, is to innervate. If that innervation is lost, what happens to the muscle? It atrophies. We call that neurogenic atrophy versus disuse atrophy when you don't use it. Okay. Another important thing is, because you need what to form molecules? You need oxygen and nutrients. So if you have decreased blood supply, or the oxygen level is decreased in the tissue, what happens? The cells are going to go through what first? Atrophy. So it gets smaller. If you go through and you don't eat a lot, you go on a diet, you're try to atrophy your fat cells, but you can also now consume and break down your muscle is another source. So when you have people have eating disorders, you'll notice their muscle is what? Very atrophic, because they're not getting their nutritional supply. And so they have to use their fat cells first and then their protein, their skeletal muscle. And then endocrine stimulation. Remember we talked about endocrine, there's a physiologic response to stimulate a anabolic response to make molecules. So the cells should get bigger, but if you lose that, it gets smaller. And what's the most common cause of atrophy in the human population? Simply getting older. So as you're going through this course, you're atrophying and going through apoptosis at the cellular level. If you ask your parents what their age is, their size, their height today, and ask what their height was when they were 20 or 19 years old your age, they'll always tell you they're smaller now than they were. And that is our fate, as a function of time. Here's a patient who has disuse atrophy. How many type of muscle fibers are there? One and two, right? Basically, these are the checkerboard pattern. So one is what? Slow sustain, anti-gravity, versus two is fast twitch, right? Glycogen. So if you're a hospital patient or somebody is bedridden, what atrophies first, type 1 or type 2 fibers? Type 2. Because what am I working against all the time on this planet because of gravity? What fibers am I using in my muscle? Type 1, slow sustain all the time. But I'm not doing this in a hospital bed because what fibers would I just use there? Right, so they go first, okay, as a function of time. Then eventually both of them will, okay? There's normal, and then you can see it's much smaller, but it's reversible. Next one is hypertrophy. Where do we find hypertrophy on this campus? Or the gym. That's where you look for hypertrophy.
Physical therapy class.
There you go. You got your athletic gear on. I can tell you're ready to go. Get a little hypertrophy. Atrophy of fat cells, hypertrophy of muscle. Okay? So what's going to happen here is you increase more structural proteins. And what's a classic example physiologically? What happens to the uterine wall? Those smooth muscle cells have to go through hypertrophy in order to get ready for labor and delivery. Because it takes a lot of energy and mechanical force for delivery. So, but what happens to the uterus after pregnancy? It gets smaller because you don't need that anymore stimulate because you don't have those hormones at high concentration that stimulate that, and it goes back to its normal state until the next time. What do you think happens to the uterus in a postmenopausal woman? It gets even smaller. So this is the fate of how tissues are going to be affected by hormones to give you in terms of like smooth muscle. Or in this case, the heart. And if you look at the heart, that's what this is. What happens, which heart wall is thicker, the left or right side of your heart, do you think? The left, because it's under what all the time? Higher pressure. But if you have hypertension, we have elevated pressure all the time, what do you think happens to your left ventricular wall? It gets even thicker. And that becomes a problem because this is pathologic hypertrophy. So what happens is while you stretch muscle, you stimulate the production of the transcription of actin and myosin genes to make actin and myosin. But there are hormones, growth factors. That's why people take growth hormone, right? Or steroids to get that extra kick. Endothelin, angiotensin II, or alpha-anergic hormones are all these things that can stimulate muscle. So here's Fresh or Fix, this heart muscle. Fresh. So now my hand becomes a heart. My heart, even though I walk straight, always points to the left. This is the apex, this is the base. The ventricular chambers are the right and left side. So when I cut the heart to look at the myocardium, I cut it on the short axis to the long axis. So we're pathologists, we're very simple-minded people. The right is the right, the left's the left. What do radiologists do? They flip it. That's why they charge more. It's true. But we'll give you more information. Okay? So what side do you see on the... What do you notice about the right ventricular wall compared to your left ventricular wall? Right. All your hearts in this room look exactly like this normal heart. And what tissues are on the outside of it? Fat. We all have fat around our heart. No matter how much you exercise, you've got fat around your heart. It's important. Okay? Fat is good. Too much? Not so good. So you got to do it. Moderation is the key to life. Okay? So this is normal myocardium. What happens now if you have hypertension? Well, this is normal myocardium, I showed you before. Now, what chamber of the heart or what wall is thickened beyond the left? This is what hypertension does to your heart. Now, the patient, will they feel this? No. But now when you have hypertrophy of heart muscle, we know this is a conduction system. So this can generate a lethal arrhythmia, and this patient can die in their sleep, flying an airplane, any moment. They could have an arrhythmia and die. Or because the muscle is so thickened, it needs what? More oxygen nutrients, and it can have a heart attack, a myocardial infarct, and then die that way as well. Remember, hypertension is occur in adults. One out of every three people in the United States have hypertension as adults. One out of every three. You're more lucky to get hypertension than winning the lotto. Okay? So exercise. That's how you prevent hypertension. Decreased amount of salt. All these good things. Because otherwise, you end up on a slide. Here you see the size of the nucleus is bigger because of more transcription. And what do you notice about the size of the cells? Bigger. Is it reversible? Yes. Because if you control your hypertension, what happens to the size of your heart muscle? It'll get to its normal size. So that's why it's important to control hypertension. Next flavor before we finish up is hyperplasia. It means increased number of cells in a tissue. And so breastfeeding, during pregnancy, cells become, go through hyperplasia, especially the breast. Okay? Or you have compensatory. Let's say you take out half your liver. The other part of the liver will grow to meet its physiologic needs and stop growing. So that's an example of hyperplasia. Or you have pathologic hyperplasia where, like in the endometrium or breast tissue, it proliferates. What happens to the mutational changes? It increases. Now you have to worry about breast cancer or endometrial cancer as a consequence to this. This is the prostate in a male. Where does the prostate sit in the male? It's basically under the bladder. Where's your bladder? And anybody in this room is right behind your pubic bone. You can find anybody's bladder within 1 second just by going to the pubic bone right in the center. There is the bladder right behind it. Doesn't matter what sex you are. In the male, if you go right below that, the inferior ischial ramus, you'll see that's where the prostate sits, right there in the middle. And so the biggest thing you have to worry about is hyperplasia or nodular hyperplasia. We cut the prostate. If the urethra is coming through here, we cut it through the short axis. So the urethra is here. And this hyperplasia can cause obstruction, especially in middle-aged older males, and you have decreased urinary flow as a consequence. Does this lead to increased prostatic cancer? The answer is no. And here we see the glands proliferating and the smooth muscle cells as well as fibroblasts. The last one is metaplasia, changing one cell type for another because of increased stress or demand. This could be epithelial cells as well as mesenchymal cells. And the classic example is gastroesophageal reflux, where your esophagus is lined by stratified squamous epithelium that's non-keratinizing, and it becomes glandular. And if we look at this, here's what the normal esophagus looks like. This is the GE junction. Its squamous cells have glycogen, that's why it's white, and you have multiple cell layers. Here it's stratified. Here you have a single layer. That's why your stomach is nice and pink. If you removed all your food, it would be pink because you can see the blood supply. But as you get reflux, you notice the epithelium has changed color, isn't it? And it's become now one single layer because it makes mucus to protect it. But the problem with gastroesophageal reflux, this is metaplasia, these cells can now become a cancer, a glandular cancer. We call it adenocarcinoma. If we look at it histologically, here you can see the squamous epithelium, it's multiple layers to it, and then we have only one single layer of cells, and that's changed because of this chronic injury to that epithelium that wasn't designed to see acid, and now the epithelium has changed from a squamous epithelium, flat cells piled up on one another, to now become a single layer or glandular cells. Okay? And that's what we call Barrett's esophagus. All right. Let's stop at this point. Yes. Any questions? Yes. So any of these cellular adaptations, they're potentially what? Reversible. That's the key clinical thing that you should remember. Welcome to pathology. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Have a pathology-free day.
This lecture was recorded by Dr. Henry Sanchez at the University of California, San Francisco.